Amina is an activist during the Arab Spring. Her blog, Gay Girl in Damascus, attracts readers from around the world. When she's mysteriously abducted, her followers mobilize, desperate to save her. What they find shocks them. I'm Samira Moyeddin, the host of Gay Girl Gone, a new 6-part series from CBC. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Hello, I'm Matt Galloway, and this is The Current Podcast.
Somehow, someone had gotten into our bank account. The police told us maybe it was through hacking into our phones. They didn't know how they did that, and we didn't know how they did that. And they got into our phones and then presumably got into banking apps that we had on our phones.
That's Joe Jacobs from Toronto. He and his wife lost $20,000 when cyber criminals appear to have accessed their line of credit. As you heard, police believe the hackers did this through Joe Jacobs' phone. Now they, Joe Jacobs and his wife, are on the hook for monthly payments plus interest for that $20,000. And he's not alone. He's among 140 BMO customers who told CBC News they've lost $1.5 million combined to fraudulent bank transfers. They say they intend to sue the bank. In the meantime, BMO says it works hard to detect cybercrime and help prevent customers from being scammed. John Wunderlich is a data protection and digital identity specialist. John, good morning.
Good morning, Matt.
Help me understand this. Let's walk through how something like this could happen. It begins with your phone. How can hackers get into your phone?
It's not so much that hackers get into your phone, although that can happen. It's much more likely that hackers or fraudsters trick you into giving away your password or login information on a false site or some other way, and then they can masquerade as you and start to create accounts or make transfers as if they were you.
So these are the relentless texts that a lot of us get from some bank that we have no card with, saying your bank card has been compromised, give us your information now.
Exactly. Or you'll get what looks like a reasonable email from insert name of bank here, but one of the letters in the bank name isn't an English letter, it's a Cyrillic letter that the computer reads differently, and it sends you to a fake website where you log in, they grab your credentials and start to use them.
So many of us do our banking now on apps, on those phones. Mm-hmm. How secure are those apps? Well, I mean, if that information is out there, I suppose they can get in at any time. But broadly, when we're using those apps in various locations, how secure are they?
Well, that's an unregulated space. So
what does that mean?
They can vary from the only regulation on the security of the app is the regulations that govern the creator of the app. So in the case of banks, there's a lot of regulations around banks, and they do a reasonable job of managing their own risk, and parenthetically noting that managing its own risk means offloading risk to the customer. Mm. So you're on your own to a certain degree. But apps in the app store, either the two big app stores, have basic checks against them, but there's nothing like a heavily regulated space enforcing security, authentication, and all of that.
Do we need to be careful where we're using these apps in terms of what network we might be on? That if we are on, you know, a hotspot, you get free Wi-Fi at the airport, for example. The warning often is that that is not secure. Tell me a little bit more about that and how that can be used against you.
Well, it's like having a conversation in a crowded restaurant. When you want to talk about something quiet and personal, you lean in and whisper so that the people around you can't hear. You don't have that option on an open Wi-Fi spot at a restaurant, so anybody can listen in. So for that kind of security, you want to make sure that you have a VPN, a virtual private network, installed on your system.
What do we know about who might be behind crimes like this? How organized are these cyber criminals?
Well, there's certainly a lot of money sloshing around in there, and organized crime will have a lot to do with it. There's I've seen reports of organized boiler rooms in East Asia, where people are just relentlessly texting and trying to inveigle people into investments. But it's a crime of opportunity, and it's very easy and cheap to just send out thousands or millions of these text messages or emails, and a very small percentage of people replying makes the money worthwhile. So you don't have to have a big organized crime.
What would the red flags be that the banks would be looking for that this kind of activity could be happening, and that the transactions that might be unfolding are not legitimate transactions? The money coming out of your account isn't actually money that you want to come out of that account.
Well, the banks have reasonably good pattern recognition software that says if this thing happens, right, there's a cliche from 20 years ago that if the bank saw two gas tank charges and a pair of sneakers in the same day, they'd freeze the account, on the theory that if a young man stole your vehicle, he'd gas up his car, his buddy's car, and then they'd go buy sneakers. So that was a red flag. But so they have some fairly sophisticated pattern recognition, but a lot of these look like legitimate transfers. And the problem comes back to, how does the bank know that it's you? And we're stuck in this 20th century password world where that really needs to go away.
BMO, when it comes to these customers who apparently lost collectively $1.5 million, BMO apparently isn't going to compensate them. The ombudsman for banking sided with the bank on this, and it says that it found that the bank complied with its obligations. Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree that that's what the law says. Then the question becomes, is the law or the regulations appropriate for protecting citizens?
And the law would say what when it comes to money that's going out of your account? That we've done everything possible to try to protect you, but if the money's coming out, we're not responsible for that money?
Buyer beware. Yes.
How is that different than credit card fraud? Because, again, people will have charges added to their credit cards. Banks will generally compensate you for that.
To a degree. One of the things that happened, for example, it used to be that credit card fraud, after $50, the banks, the credit card institution would cover it. But when we went to chip and PIN, when you put your card in, you put in your PIN number, if you read the fine print of the agreements at the time, as I did, it said that if we get a chip and the PIN is correctly entered, that's not on us, that's on you.
Going to say, 3 years ago, the Office of the Privacy Commissioner found that there were security deficiencies at banks. I just wonder whether those have been fixed, whether the loopholes that may have existed have been closed up, and whether that security is, given it's people's money, is as tight as it could be.
Oh, it's certainly not as tight as it could be. The first thing that needs to happen is that there should be, remember, banks, when they manage risk, are managing their risk, and they're not managing your risk. That's on you right now. And the regulations for banks, as you talked about earlier, when they said, when the ombudsman side with them, they followed all the rules, they did all the things in compliance. So in the Wild West of the internet or these other things, you need to arm yourself. That's sadly unfortunate. But the banks also need to move to encourage people to move away from passwords and start to use more secure ways to authenticate themselves. There are ways to do that. The banks haven't adopted them yet.
Like what? What is it that could be there that would protect people's accounts and protect the integrity of those accounts?
Passkeys is the word that's being used. There's an internet alliance of technology companies that have introduced a system called passkeys that are based on cryptography in the same way that you have a secure transaction when you go to a secure website. And they're very phishing resistant. It means that if I've got my phone, my device, or a security key, and I go to a website that's passkey enabled, nobody else can do that. They can't steal my credentials, because those credentials are bound to my passkey. It's the same as having a secure key in your hand to open the lock in your door, except it's done with cryptography. But very few, if any, banks in Canada have adopted that yet. And there's a painful adoption period they're probably going to go through as people adjust to these new systems.
In the meantime, ignore those texts that might say that your account with a card that at a bank that you don't work with is now being compromised.
Yeah, use a password manager. Never respond online or in a phone call for a solicitation of funds or a payment. Always end the call, go on your own browser and initiate the session with your bank or with the purported merchant yourself, because they're endlessly creative in how they pretend to be who they aren't.
John, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Matt.
John Wunderlich is a data protection and digital identity specialist. He was in Toronto.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.